the South, not your daddy's Appalachia. Hard part of the South, progress cannot wait.
Hello everyone and welcome to Pod of the South, a production of Change Tennessee. Pull up a chair and refill your sweet tea as we peel back the layers of Southern politics to get a better understanding of what's going on and why it matters. Due to scheduling conflicts, things are going to be a little different this episode. It'll just be me. So, instead of jumping into a bigger picture topic like we normally do, we're going to do a little dive into the current Haitian refugee crisis and what led us to this point. We're going to describe a brief history of American imperialism going all the way back to the early 1800s, so its foundation, and how that foundation helped create the refugee crisis we're currently facing. Because it'll just be me, we're not going to do any ads this week, so if you really look forward to that, I'm sorry, and if you hate them, then this is the episode for you. And if you hate me, well, shit. So to begin, we're going to just jump into the foundation of American imperialism, especially around that early 1800s period. I mean, that's really when the U.S. Empire really started taking off and really started putting its feelers out there. We just won our independence from England. We were coming off the War of 1812. We're really a fledgling country right now and really starting to build our empire because we have all the people who are running the country are also kind of that aristocratic class that helped build the English Empire as well. I mean, it's no secret that our founding fathers wanted more and more and more. But to really get into American imperialism, it really takes off again with the Monroe Doctrine in 1823. The big point of the Monroe Doctrine is it was an anti-European colonialization effort. Europe was going through its super, super messy phase of colonization and empire building over in Africa, with tons of slave revolts and just everything was hitting the fan in Africa right around this time. The U.S. wanted to be able to separate themselves, to distance themselves from Europe, saying, that's the old way of doing things, that's the old world, we're better than that, we are the new world, we're new, we're going to be the best. We're not going to be like those Europeans who beat and torture their populations. That's happening over in Africa, and kind of around the same time, leading up to the Monroe Doctrine in 1823, you also had your Central and South American countries starting to break free from Spanish control and Spanish colonization. There's a ton of revolutions around this time and small and revolts happening that is creating a new world, a free new world. The United States got their freedom. Right at the turn of the century, now you start having Central America and South America breaking free from Spain. That really played into making the Monroe Doctrine the theme that it was. One of the intended consequences from it is that it kept the new world and the old world separate. Europe is going to keep to itself. They will not come into the new world and colonize there. That is the U.S.'s place to control. Europe stays in their half of the hemisphere, and we will stay in our part of the hemisphere. Keep it separate. What that does is it opened up Central and South America and the Caribbean to U.S. exploitation. Europe is the police on their half, defending colonialization and defending free peoples over there amongst themselves. The U.S. has all of Central and South America to defend and keep from new colonial powers coming to be. So that's kind of how the U.S. gets involved there and kind of sets the foundation for everything that happens going forward. So the U.S. has established themselves as the preeminent defenders of freedom in Central and South America. Europe can no longer come in and be the colonizers for this area. The U.S. will protect them from Europe. Fast forward a little bit to 1904, and you have the Roosevelt Corollary to the Monroe Doctrine. It relaxes the anti-war efforts, or the anti-war language that the Monroe Doctrine originally said. The Monroe Doctrine stated that the U.S. would not get involved. For the most part, there were certain circumstances which they would get involved, but the Roosevelt Corollary kind of walked those statements back. And it did so by stating that the U.S. could intervene to enforce international debts. In effect, it made the United States an international banking police. If a country owed another country money, the U.S. could intervene to make sure that country A paid country B whatever money they were owed. And again, this is 1904, and so if we rewind a little bit back to the turn of the 19th century, you have all of these New World, the Central and South American countries, breaking free from Spain. What do they have to do? They have to take out loans to buy defense systems now, to outfit an army, to build a navy. Well, who are the countries that have all the money? It's your colonial powers. It's the United States, it's Great Britain, it's France, it's Germany, it's Spain. So all of these countries have the money to loan out to these Central and South American countries, and the U.S. has just come out and said, hey, we get to enforce any loans that they may have against your country. We're allowed to do that. It's in our side of the world. We can do that. Now that we've kind of talked about a foundation of how U.S. empire, and again, this is a super brief, super concise foundation of it. There's a lot more to go into we could talk about, but I want to look at how these two elements, the Monroe Doctrine and the Roosevelt Corollary, especially affected Haiti because of the refugee crisis we're facing now. This goes back all the way to this time with the doctrine. Quick background on Haiti is it was under French control through 1804. During that time, ending in 1804, you had the Haitian Revolution, which was incredibly ugly. Almost the entire white population on the island was eliminated. Men, women, children. The Haitians just went and just basically purged the island of the white population. You know, they were it was a slave culture, so you had, or a slave society. It's really hard to judge against that. So the Haitian people had hit a breaking point and they just snapped. Fast forward a few years after the Haitian Revolution in 1804, France files an indemnity charge against the Republic of Haiti. For those of you who don't know what indemnity, it is when one party forces another party to pay for damages caused by illegal activity. France accused Haiti of murder and destruction of property against the white population on the island during the Haitian Revolution, in which those 5,000 people were massacred. What they did in 1825, they demanded that the Haitian Republic pay 150 million golden francs. In 1825, 150 million. A few years later, in 1838, France reduced that charge from 150 million francs to 90 million. 90 million francs in 1838 is the modern equivalent of $21 billion. Just to give you an idea of how outrageous these claims were that France was leveling against Haiti for their fight for independence. They are demanding that Haiti pays the equivalent of $21 billion, and that's after it was reduced. You know, you're almost looking at $35 billion in today's money of what they were demanding Haiti pay back for this. An absolute outrageous amount of money that the French were demanding from Haiti. And they had been paying this up until 2010. And we'll get into that a little later. And that's how France set up the skeleton of why Haiti is in such a bad spot and why we have all of these refugees flocking to the United States. During this, Haiti has their freedom and they owe France a shit ton of money. I mean, 90 million francs by 1838. And the top three loan collectors of Haiti during this time are France, Germany, and the United States. Germany and the United States were helping them finance their defense forces. That way, the newly formed Haitian Republic could actually finance a army and defend their country from other foreign invaders. The U.S. being in the top three loan collector of Haiti's payments played directly into the Roosevelt Corollary by the time it came around in 1904. Because if you remember, the Roosevelt Corollary enabled the U.S. to play global banking police. The U.S. now had the permission from the federal government to go and get involved directly and seize assets from Haiti should they not be able to pay their debts that were created by the global powers. France because of the indemnity charges, and then Germany and the U.S. capitalizing on Haiti not having any money and issuing loans to them in order to fund a defense force. During all this, a small group of U.S. businesses, through investments and buyouts, became sole controllers of the newly formed Republic of Haiti National Bank. So now, not only does the U.S. have permission to go in should Haiti not be able to pay their debts, a group of U.S. bankers now has controlling interest of the Haitian National Bank. Going in a few years later after the Roosevelt Corollary, which allowed us to be these global money police, from 1915 to 1947, the U.S. took 40% of the national income of Haiti. So during these 32 years, the U.S. took 40% of Haitian money, while they are still paying over 90 million francs plus interest to the French for the indemnity charges. During all of this, I believe it was during the FDR presidency, the Marines relocated the Haitian gold reserves, which equated to about $13 million in today's money, to the United States, which caused even more civil unrest because, again, they just threw off the yoke of actual colonial invasion and colonial powers through Spain. Now they have this economic colonialization and economic empire in control, where the Haitians may be in office, in control of their country, but every 40 cents on the dollar is going to the U.S., plus whatever's going to Germany, and plus whatever's going to France. They have absolutely no money in the country, and your economic reserves are now being completely removed from your country as well and being relocated to one of your colonial oppressors. Kind of starting to see the picture that's being painted here. Anytime Haiti starts being able to get up on their feet, the United States and France just come in and kick the stool out from under them and knock them back down on the ground. Another thing that's important to note right here, just after World War II, when Europe was a mess from all of the fighting and all of the bombing that just absolutely destroyed the infrastructure in Europe, the U.S. wanted to capitalize on this as they were the new global power. The U.S. controlled about 50% of global GDP during this time because Europe no longer existed. It was really easy for the U.S. to jump up and take a vast majority of global GDP. But that wasn't enough for the United States during this time. They wanted to increase that dramatically. The consensus amongst Washington and U.S. leadership was, why can't we control more? Who's to stop us from controlling 75% of global GDP? What's to stop us from collecting on 90% of global GDP? And that really escalated everything that the U.S. was doing on a global level. Haiti, obviously, the U.S. being one of their top loan collectors, and the Roosevelt Corollary, Haiti really got squeezed under the microscope during this time period. Any money that was coming in was being siphoned off through American business interests. And as we talked about earlier, France being one of those massive loan collectors of Haiti's debt, that existed, like I said, until 2010. France finally forgave Haiti the loan that they were demanding pay in 2010 following the earthquake that just wrecked the country, and they are still trying and have never recovered from since then. France finally saw it into their hearts that maybe Haiti shouldn't have to pay these bullshit charges that they dropped on them when it became a free country. So let's now fast forward to today. As it's been reported in the news, there are thousands of Haitian refugees fleeing Haiti trying to come to the United States. One of the most recent numbers of the U.S. deportations is over 14,000 refugees. Estimates really put it between 13 and 15,000. No one's really sure how many there are. But these people are fleeing absolute, complete poverty. As we just went over, we're talking over 200 years of financial siphoning by the global powers. Because all of this money is being pulled out of Haiti and going to other countries, they have no ability, or have a very limited ability, to build infrastructure for their people to have the things that we come to expect from a government. This is solely due to U.S. and Western influence in their country. Broken record, the indemnity charges and then the U.S. complete siphoning of Haitian money. When United state's business interests took over the national bank. Combining that with the Marines stealing the gold, 40% of any national income being taken as loan payments, the U.S. really just took the baton from France while they were still in the race and just kept Haiti from being able to establish themselves as a flourishing country. And this is across the board all United States imperialist efforts, all across Central and South America. Why? Because of the Monroe Doctrine and the Roosevelt corollary to the Monroe Doctrine. That set this up. We're seeing the impact of it in Haiti and what is now happening when all of these Haitians trying to flee this country that we have just hollowed out. But now, with them fleeing to the United States and trying to cross into the United States, seeking asylum. This is not your normal immigration. This is asylum. They are saying, we will die. There is a direct threat to our lives if we stay in Haiti. And what's happening when they're getting on the border? They are being beaten and whipped by U.S. Border Patrol agents. A lot of cases, and most of these cases, are being flown back to Haiti, where, as of 2017, over 2.5 million people still need of assistance, which is about 23% of the population. So think about it, almost one out of every four people in Haiti need international assistance to live. They have gotten punched while they are down constantly. I mentioned earlier the 2010 earthquake that completely wrecked the country. They were still rebuilding from the earthquake in 2010 when in 2016 Hurricane Matthew came through and absolutely wrecked any type of progress they were making and then set the country back even further. Kind of the cherry on top for this little bundle of disasters that was hitting Haiti. With all the international aid workers coming into the country, there was a huge cholera outbreak because they did not have the infrastructure to dispose of wastewater that these international aid agencies should have been putting in. The Red Cross had one of their most successful, if not their most successful, global fundraiser in their history. It's reported they raised somewhere around $550 million for Haiti during this window, and there are huge questions about where this money went. There's reports that only 6 houses were built. The Red Cross is arguing that there were over 100,000 houses built. There's a shit ton of controversy about what happened to this reported $550 million that was, plus what everybody else did as well. Where did this money go that was supposed to be going into the Haitian economy and the Haitian infrastructure? Natural disasters completely eradicated any infrastructure they had and any ability to build going forward. They have no money, and now nature, in part due to climate change, you know, these are those extreme weather events we've been talking about lately. When you don't have the infrastructure in place and extreme weather happens or a natural disaster happened, it completely eliminates a country's ability to rebuild. Just as all this is happening, we fast forward again to what is happening in the last 2 years in the COVID-19 pandemic. It's not a cliche to say that the pandemic is a global pandemic. It is not a United States pandemic. It is not a it is not a UK pandemic, Germany or Europe, if you want to go on a continent level. It is global. Every single country has to work together in order to get by this pandemic and get us moving forward. But what the pandemic has shown us, it has put a huge spotlight on the global haves and the global have-nots. Wealthy nations, your first world nations, developed nations, whatever language you want to use, your wealthy nations control over 50% of the vaccine doses while only being in control of about 20% of the global population. If you pay attention to the news with the booster news coming here in the United States, President Biden bought another 1 billion vaccine doses. President Biden said that these doses were to distribute to the less well-off nations who don't have the ability to buy these doses. But again, the U.S. bought them, so now they're in control of those 1 billion doses. So if the U.S. decides that the U.S. deserves these doses of the COVID vaccine, or they can auction them off to the highest bidder, which is probably going to go to that middle tier of countries, not the global poor, but not the global wealthy because they have enough, or maybe some of the global wealthy will be able to buy some of these if they didn't buy enough for boosters for their population. You can see the global wealthy just continuing to flex their economic power over everybody else and holding something above their head because they can. 50% of the vaccine doses in the wealthy nations accounts for about 245% more doses than their population. So they are just absolutely hoarding those doses of the COVID-19 vaccine. And Haiti, El Salvador, all these countries that we consider the Global South or call the Global South are unable to purchase vaccines to vaccinate their populations, which is only going to allow the virus and any disease, if you don't have vaccines, to mutate and proliferate and come up with vaccine-resistant versions of that disease. Of the continent of Africa, less than 10% of the population has been vaccinated. I don't know what the numbers are for South America off the top of my head, but I assume it's not very good either. And then you look at countries like the United States, Israel, the UK, Germany, that have much better vaccination rates than these other places because they have hoarded the vaccine. And all of this has added up, just hit after hit after hit, to countries like Haiti, where the Haitians have nowhere else to go. Their country has been rocked by two natural disasters, cholera outbreak, and now it's being ravaged by a global pandemic. They have nowhere else to go. The specter of U.S. imperialism has completely stripped out and hollowed out every element of the Haitian economy to where they have nothing. And we are the closest wealthy nation to them. People are looking to escape poverty that has been created by the U.S. and Western influence. The U.S. is the wealthiest nation nearby, and they are fleeing here because we have stripped all of the wealth out of their country and transplanted it here. We have completely taken away Haiti's ability to defend for themselves and to take care of their own population. So now they're fleeing to the United States, where we have the infrastructure to take care of them in order to live a healthy and successful life, because it's not going to happen there. The United States has prevented that from happening. So when you kind of zoom out from what's happening with this refugee crisis and look at the history and pattern of behavior from the United States, from France, from the global north, it really starts to paint a picture of why we have 15,000 Haitians fleeing for the United States seeking asylum. That's why a few years ago we had the migrant trains from Central and South America coming up to the United States seeking asylum. Because the United States has stripped away and taken away these countries' ability to fund themselves and to be successful on their own, and they see the United States as a shimmering beacon because we have all of their money. We wanted to control over half of global GDP, and we did so by taking the GDP from smaller nations that lacked the ability to defend themselves. Through the Roosevelt Corollary, we went in and said, we have the right to enforce these debts to these nations, and you will pay them under threat of military occupation. And so that's a very brief overview and dive into what's going on in Haiti and why we have this refugee crisis and why it's only going to get worse. We need to take a very deep look at U.S. imperial policy and U.S. foreign policy and start to break down what does it mean for these other countries. These countries need to be able to control their own natural resources, their own economies, that way they can build their own infrastructure to take care of their populations. Because the way it is right now, it's not going to happen. The U.S. has done way too much damage to be continued to be involved in it. So when these citizens of Haiti, when these refugees from Central America, from El Salvador, from Guatemala, come to the United States seeking asylum, it is now on us to take care of them because we created the problems that they are fleeing. I hope this has been an enlightening breakdown into the situation for many of you. So thank you for tuning in this week. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at pod_south, and you can find me on Twitter at Graham851. If you have more to weigh in on what's going on with this Haitian refugee crisis, let us know. But also make sure to leave us those sweet, sweet 5-star reviews as they help others discover us and hear the siren song of Appalachian leftists. Thank you, everybody, and have a great day.
Hot pot of the South, not your daddy's Appalachia. Hot pot of the South, progress cannot wait.